In a mosque in West London, Iraqi Shia exiles weep on their day of lamentation, a ritual banned in their own country. It tells the story of the death of their Imam Hussein 1300 years ago, surrounded by a tyrant's army, denied water, slaughtered with his women and children at Karbala. The lament for Karbala speaks for the present as well as for the past. It speaks for the disasters which have befallen the Shia since the Gulf War, when their sacred cities were devastated by Saddam. It's about the country they have lost. A lament for the South. Every Shia holds in his or her heart a visionary landscape. For the Shia faith arose in the biblical Garden of Eden, the land of the two rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, whose waters nourished the first civilization on earth. Surrounded by the palm forests of the Euphrates, Karbala lies in the plain of southern Iraq. Hussein's shrine is revered by Muslims everywhere, but especially by the world's 150 million Shia. In the old days, the days before Saddam, you'd see pilgrims coming here in their millions from as far away as Persia, Afghanistan, and India. At the end of the Gulf War, encouraged by President Bush, the Shia rose against Saddam's tyranny. And here at Karbala, Saddam took savage revenge. There were no TV cameras here to record what happened. Only this extraordinary amateur videotape, shot by two brothers, one of whom was killed. Their pictures show the climax of the Shia rebellion at the end of March. The revolt had almost succeeded, but Saddam's Republican Guard and their tanks had been left intact by the Allies. And in the end, the rebels were hopelessly outgunned. The city is now surrounded. With time running out and no hope of escape, a last embrace. Inside Hussein's shrine, desperate women and children can only call on God now to help them. Most of these people are about to die. Inside the shrine, in a makeshift hospital, volunteer doctors and nurses are struggling to cope with the casualties. Outside, Saddam's tanks can be seen creeping up the main street. The final assault has begun. Saddam obliterated Karbala. Like a king of ancient Assyria, he inflicted a biblical punishment on his rebellious subjects. At the end of the Gulf War, the city's population had been swelled by thousands of outsiders who believed the Allies wouldn't harm the holy shrines. Saddam had no such scruples. It was a month after the revolt before foreign journalists were allowed into the city. This is what they saw. It was said that some of the Republican Guard tanks had come into Kerbala bearing placards saying "No more Shia after today." At the shrine itself, they gave full vent to their anti-Shia feelings. The cedarwood doors were left splintered on their hinges as the guards smashed their way through to get at those inside. In the great mosque itself, even the names of the Shia imams were machine-gunned, murdered in the Middle Ages, killed again by Saddam. Few could have survived such a hail of bullets. In the makeshift hospital, only debris remained. Across the south, as the April rains fell, the story was the same. In Basra, Samawa, Nasiriyah. In Najaf, Saddam's troops had fired 55 Scud missiles into the old city. All these events took place while Allied troops were still on Iraqi soil. The university here in Najaf was 1,000 years old, in Shia eyes rather like Canterbury and Oxford rolled into one. Along with 100 Shia scholars, thousands of ordinary citizens were rounded up and have not been seen again. The spiritual head of the world's 150 million Shia, 90-year-old Grand Ayatollah Al-Khoei, was placed under house arrest. Khoei had stood for the humane tradition of Najafi and Shia scholarship. Through the years of persecution by Saddam's Ba'ath Party, he'd tried to keep religion out of politics. In the end, he'd nailed his colors to the mast and declared the rebels' cause was just. Now his distress spoke for all Shia.
There is nothing such a thing. Everything is finished and I'm in my house.